Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Bet Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Machnis adam perutav mipnei aganavim." Person is allowed to bring in his fruit because he has a certain amount of fear that they will be stolen, that they are exposed now in order to protect them from being stolen. He's able to bring them inside. B'sholeh pishtano min mishra. He's allowed to take his pishtan out of the soaking area, b'shvil shelo teaved, so that's not lost, meaning that doesn't get ruined. Ubevad shelo yikaven et melachto b'moed. One qualification, which is that you cannot make it that this work was left specifically to be done on Chol HaMoed, meaning that you had time beforehand, but you say, look, we're off on Chol HaMoed, may as well get this done on Chol HaMoed. You can't do that. It's only because there was no other opportunity to do this beforehand, therefore you do it on Chol HaMoed. But if you had other opportunities to do it, then you cannot do it on Chol HaMoed. V'kulam, im kivnu melachtam moed yovedu. If they did, meaning that he had opportunities to do it and he still doesn't on Chol HaMoed, then there is a knas, there's a fine that is imposed upon him where we let it go to waste, we let it get ruined, meaning that it's his loss. He's not allowed to deal with it. Now, Tano, we have here a qualification by the Gemara about the Mishnah. This idea of bringing in the payroll to Pnei HaGanavim is qualified by the statement, you have to do this in a quieter way. You have to do this in a low-key way. It cannot be done in a public manner. Rav Yosef Havalei Kishure, he had these boards, or korot, that were building beams that he had outside. Aylinu b'yomama, he brought them in during the daytime. Amar le Abaye, Abaye was a Talmud of Rav Yosef, says to him, V'atanyo, u'v'ad shiachnisem b'tzina. So, b'toch v'eto, we just had this statement here, which is a qualification in our Mishnah, that if you bring it in, b'pnei aganavim, you have to do it in a private manner. You can't do this in a public manner. Here he's doing it in the middle of the day. He says, this is the most private way I could do it, to do it during the daytime. Kevan de Belelia, Bau Gavre Yitere, Ubau either Meduvre or Medukre, Denura Avshamilsa. He said, if I was to do this at night, when supposedly it'd be quieter, I'd have to bring in more people to do it at night, and I'd have to bring in lighting at night. It'd end up being a much more public manner to do it in what would have been the quote unquote more private manner. It'll make much more noise and much more public issue if I do it at night than I do it during the day. And therefore, doing it during the day is the most private way to do it and the quietest way to do it. The unassuming or unobtrusive way to do it is to do it during the day. Now, the question that has to be raised here is, we haven't seen this qualification yet, of Bovad Shiachnisem B'tzina'ah, that he has to take it in privately. Why is this Mishnah qualified by that statement? What about all the other exceptions to the rule that we have in terms of Melechet Chol HaMoed? How come nobody ever said, why is this unique in the fact that you have to do it quietly? So there are different approaches of the Rishonim. There are some, like the Mordechai who says, this applies to anything that's a Davar Avet. Any Davar Avet where you use the dispensation to allow you to do Melacha on Chol HaMoed, this is just an example. Anytime you do Melacha a Davar Avet, you got to do it B'tzina'ah. That's one approach. Other Rishonim say, no, this is unique in the category of Davar Avet because one of two reasons. Either it's unique because it's an exogenous variable. Generally, when we talk about Dover Ovid, it's the item itself that is at risk. So for instance, like the Pishtan and the Mishra. There, the Pishtan, the flax itself, is at risk because it's going to rot if you don't do anything with it. Bipnei HaGanavim is not because the item itself is going to rot. There's some external item that's going to come and take away whatever it is, fruits or anything else that you have outside. And that's why it's different here, and that's why you have to do Bitzina. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that anytime we talk about Dover Aved, we're talking about something that certainly will go bad. If you leave the Pishtan in the Mishra, that certainly will go bad. If you leave the fruits outside, there's not certainty that they will be stolen. It's a safek. It's a question. Look, it might be an overwhelmingly high percentage that will get stolen, but nevertheless, it's still not something that's absolute. So because of those two reasons, people suggest, or the Rishonim suggest here, that these are exceptions to the rule. And that's why you have to do B'tzina'ah, because this is not your classic case of Dover Aved. So according to them, this does not have broad application. Versus the Mordechai, who thinks that it does have broad application, the Shulchan Aruch brings down the halacha that it only applies to this case, doesn't apply it broadly to all cases of Dover Aved, even though generally we do try to do things in a quieter way, even if they're Dover Aved, but there is no requirement beyond the case of taking it away from theft. All right, next, v'sholeh pishtano min ha-mishra, you can take the flax out of its soaking area. Kivei melachto b'moed umet. He went ahead and he left it over to Chol HaMoed. Even though he had ample opportunity to take care of it prior to Chol HaMoed, he left it to Chol HaMoed and then he dies. So now his son is left with a position where he can deal with this on Chol HaMoed because his father didn't take care of it before Chol HaMoed. Now for the son, it's really the first time he's engaging in it and it wasn't his responsibility until now. So for him, this is the first opportunity he could deal with it. So Mao Shikansu Banav Acharav. The knas, the fine that we impose here, does it apply to the child as well as the father? Meaning that the father didn't do it, so the child is now penalized along with him. Or do we say, no, we're dealing with different people. The father was to be penalized. The son did nothing wrong. He will not be penalized. The real question is the penalty associated with the individual or associated with the item? So that's the question we'll see posed in a second. If you want to say, now they're going to give you other examples in Shas where we have this question arise. And it is, Tzoreim Ozen Bechor. A Kohen goes ahead and he makes a mum in the ear of a Bechor. We know that Kohanim are suspect with regards to putting mumim in Bechor, because the Bechor cannot be eaten until it gets a mum. He's responsible to bring it up until then, and it costs the Kohen money. He's out money as long as he has to keep taking care of this Bechor until it gets a mum. So therefore, he puts a mum in it. Now, if you intentionally put a mum in it, that's a violation of an Iser Midoraita to put a mum in a Bechor, in Kodoshim. So if he goes in and does it, Kansu Beno Acharav, there they were, Kones, his son after him, and if he put the mum in the ear, you cannot use that mum to shech the animal, not him, and not his children after him. That is off limits. He has to get another mum in the animal before they're allowed to shech it. So there Gemara says, Mishum Di Surah Doraita. Over there, we're talking about an Iser Min HaTorah, whereas over here, we're not talking about an Iser Min HaTorah. Now, wait a minute. We are talking about an Iser Min HaTorah. Didn't we just say that Melachet Chol HaMoed is Iser Midoraita? That's what we just spoke about 2 daf ago. That's the difference between Iser Melacha and Chol HaMoed versus Iser Melacha in Avel. That the Iser Melacha of Chol HaMoed is a Din Doraita. But over here, with the terms to Iser Melacha Doraita, it's not exactly Doraita because here it is a davar aved. In the end, even though he was mikavein melachto the Chol HaMoed, he left it over until Chol HaMoed. He was the one who caused it to be in that situation. But once it reaches that situation, it is a davar melachet aved. And in Ochanami, min haTorah, it is mutar. The imposition of the fine or the qualification that you can't do it, the mikavein melachto, is only in Isur de Rabbanan. So now the lavi sur de right to who the habalo mikavein mutar the gamre. If you weren't mitkaveh to do it on the malacha of Chol HaMoed on that moment itself, then it would have been totally mutar. So the underlying malacha is not asur. So why is it asur? The Chachamim said, don't do this. Don't be mitkaveh in malachto lemoed. So that's why it's only in Isur Derabanan here. We're not dealing with the level of Isur Doraita. So that's the first differentiation that the Gemara makes and says, there's a case Doraita, so don't use that as a proof, because here we're only talking about an Isur Derabanan. Let's try another case where we have this. What happens to a case where macharav do the oved kochavim? Person sells his slave to a non-Jew, umet, and then he passes away. Kansu b'no acharav. Over there again, they demanded that the son redeem the slave. There, if you sell a slave to a non-Jew, then we obligate the person who sold the slave to the non-Jew to pay even up to 100-fold of his value to get them and redeem him, take him out of that situation. Why? It's not a Jewish slave, it's an eved kenani. But Evan Kanani, who's then chayav in mitzvot, once he becomes a slave to a Jew, because he goes through a quasi-conversion process in order to be an Evan Kanani, and he's chayav in mitzvot, like a woman. So he's chayav in mitzvot, say she lo azman grama, and in mitzvot lo tase. So that's the Gemara says, mishum tochol yoma, mafkelei mi mitzvot. Over there, we're talking about a serious issue. The serious issue is now, every day that he's there with the Oved Kochavim, he's not going to be performing the mitzvot. So because of that, this is a significant issue, so significant that we're going to penalize not only the father, but the son. But Melechet Chol HaMoed maybe doesn't live up to that level. We're talking about one Isser there. We're not talking about the inability to practice any of the mitzvot. So for these two other examples, they are in a different category, either because it's Doraita or because you're talking about all the mitzvot. So we can't prove anything from this. Hacha Mai. In our case, what is this situation? Gavra Konis Rabbanan Valete. The knas applies to the individual, and he's gone. He died, so therefore the knas dissipates. Or is the problem associated with the object itself, and the object itself is still extant here. The child is responsible to deal with the object. We have a Mishnah by Shvi'it. Sadeh shenit kavtza b'shvi'it. A field in which he took out the thorns on Shvi'it. Tizra l'motzei Shvi'it. One can plant it on Motzei Shvi'it. Over here, shenit kavtza, as Tosfo points out, it's got to be here where the thorns are detached from the ground. So we're only talking about a lighter Isser, what we call a malacha de Rabbanan. Since it's only a malacha de Rabbanan, and it's not associated directly with the land itself, therefore, if he does it on Shvi'it, we allow him to plow the field on Motzei Shvi'it. Nitaiva o nidaira. If he fertilizes the field, these are two different ways to fertilize the field. Either he trucks in the fertilizer, he brings in the fertilizer and he fertilizes the field. O nidaira comes from like a deer behemot, which is he sets up a corral in the field. By setting up the corral, the animals themselves are creating the fertilizer in the field because he put a corral in his field. So lo tizra l'motzei shvi'it. If he does that, he can't plant the field afterwards because he did avodat hakarka. Now, even if it's an avodat hakarka, that's dirabanan in this case, because these may not be the melachot that are asurot min haTorah on shvi'it. Nevertheless, here we have a penalty that you're not allowed to plant the field afterwards. Now, that's the explanation that Rashi gives. Tosafot quotes from the Beinu Chananel that the case of netaiva is not fertilizing, like Rashi says, but rather choresh b'charisha yetera. He plowed it extra. He did extra plowing in the field that wasn't necessarily necessary for the planting, but it made it better or easier for the planting. So over there, again, the question of why that's only derabanan, whether charisha is an isur d'oraita as a machloket amongst the rishonim, whether charisha has an isur d'oraita on shvi'it, or here because it's extra plowing, it doesn't fall under that category of isur d'oraita. But either way, we're talking about an isur derabanan. But that's karka. And there is a penalty of lo tizra l'motzei shvi'it. V'amar Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina naktinan. Heitiva umeit b'no zora. So there where he does one of these melachot, if he passes away, his child is allowed to plant the field. Amar l'didei kansu rabbanan libre lo kansu rabbanan. So here you see clearly that the penalty applies to the individual, not to the object. So achanami in our case too. L'didei kansu rabbanan libre lo kansu rabbanan. So now we have a parallel case where we're talking about a knas dirabanan in an issue that is dirabanan. Now it's true here, it's a similar type of case where there's an underlying problem d'oraita, which is work on shvi'it is d'oraita. So too, melacha on chol hamoed is d'oraita. But in our instance, we're dealing with a rabbinic a derivative of that, which is, in our case, it's melacha ta'aveid. So technically it's allowed, but the chachamim disallowed it because it's mekavei melachto. So too by Shvi'it. This is not allowed me, the Rabbanan, to do this work on Shvi'it. And we see that the penalty only applies to the individual, not to the field itself. So too in our case, that the penalty applies to the individual, not to the son, and he's allowed to do the Melechet Aved. Amar Abaye, Naktina, Timei, Teharotav, Umeit. If a person goes ahead and makes his friends Teharot Tamei, Lo Kansu B'no Acharav. They didn't put the Knas on his child afterwards. So here you have a case where a person or individual who is mitamei the tarot of another individual, he caused them monetary loss. Technically, min haTorah, he doesn't have to do anything because he can say, arei shalcha lefanecha. You can add the object back. If you hand the object back in a case of gneva or damage, then you're patur. You hand it back the object. This is what we call hezek sheinu nikar. It's a damage that's not apparent in the object. So if he hands him the object back, he says, here's your object. Here it is. Take it. I didn't do anything to it. Meantime, you know, there is hezek here because now it's tamei and not tahor. It does affect the individual, whether it affects him because he can't eat it bizman atara or because this was truma now becomes worthless. But if he says arei shalcha lefanecha, then he's out. He doesn't have to do anything. So there's a penalty midrabanan. Despite the fact that it's hezek enu nikar, he has to pay back the individual he caused the damage to. So over here he says, Rabbi says, the halacha clearly is that if he's tamei taro tov umeit, lo kansu b'no acharav. They did not penalize the child after him. So, my time, huh? Hezek sheinu kar lo shmei hezek. Hezek that is not apparent, that is not obvious in the physical manifestation of the object, that's not called hezek. Did they take kansu rabbanan, the brei lo kansu rabbanan? They penalize the individual who did the hezek, they're not going to penalize the child afterwards to pay for that damage, even though technically the father was obligated in that payment, the child is not obligated in that payment because it's not real hezek. It's a hezek that involves a penalty. The penalty only applies to the individual, not to the object itself. Right now, next Mishnah. En lochim batim abadim ubehima el tzarach hamoed. One may not purchase a house slaves or animals unless he needs them for the moed, for yom tov or for chol moed, or the tzorach hamocher shein lo ma yochal, or it's for the benefit of the seller who has nothing to eat. So meaning that the seller has permission to do this because that's one of the exceptions to the rule of melechet chol moed, is someone who is ein lo ma yochal. Someone doesn't have something to eat, is allowed to work on chol moed, is allowed to garner compensation during that period of time in order that he can enjoy the moed and have for what to eat during chol moed. So by mini rov mirav nachman, schar pula she'ein lo ma yochal mahu. In a case where there's an individual who doesn't have anything to eat, are you allowed to give him work on chol moed in order to get him the money that he needs? It's not a case where you need it. It's a case where the person who is doing the work needs it. Are you allowed to give him the work in order that he does have what to eat on chol moed? So Malay Tanina, it's our Mishnah. Ol tzorach hamocher shein lo ma yochal. It's a case where the mocher, the seller, has nothing to eat. Le'tuye mai, what does that come to include? Lav le'tuye skar pula, isn't that coming to include a case where you're giving compensation to someone who doesn't otherwise have means to supply themselves or provide for themselves during chol moed? Le'lo, perusheika mifaresh. It's explaining that part of the Mishnah, meaning that the Mishnah says, what is the case that you're allowed to lochim batim vavadim ubeima el tzorach hamoed? Oh, the tzorach hamocher she'en lo ma yochal. It's explaining to you the tzorach hamoed. What is called the tzorach hamoed is what she'en lo the mocher ma yochal. But you can't prove anything to this about schar peula. Can't talk about compensation here. Here we're talking about an object where you're buying an object that's for a tzorach hamoed. In that case, what's called tzorach hamoed? One of the things that's called the tzorach hamoed is the seller needs the money. That's called tzorach hamoed. But that's not talking about compensation, salary, wages. That's simply talking about an object that he's selling. So that would just be an explanation for Mishnah. It's not a second reason. It's not telling you that, you know what, another reason is that you can pay him wages. It's telling you simply that, you know what tzorach hamoed is? Tzorach hamoed is when the mocher needs the money. So that doesn't tell you about the case that we're looking for. We're looking for a case where he's getting paid wages or compensation, not where he's selling an item and taking the money from the sold item and using that to supply himself on the moed. So, et ve'abaye, ein kotvim shtarei chov b'moed. You're allowed to write a document of loan on chol moed. Vim enu mamino, if he doesn't trust him, question whether the word o should be here or not, or o she'en lo ma yochal, he has nothing to eat, har ze yichtov, then he can write it. She'en lo ma yochal, what does it mean he has nothing to eat? Latui mai, lav latui schar pula. Isn't this a case where the sofer has nothing to eat and you want to give him business? So now he has money to use on chol moed. So you're allowed to document the loan, not because you need to document the loan, but because the person writing the shtar needs money. So that sounds like it. Shma mina. From this we can prove that you have the ability to give wages on chol moed, and that's called tzorach hamoed, to pay someone to do something that you don't need, but because he needs the wages. So shma mina. Motiv Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet challenges this and says, there are three professions that are allowed to do melacha on Erev Pesach until Chatzot. After Chatzot, there's an Isser because of the Korban HaPesach. So there's an Isser melacha. In Perek Revi'i, in the fourth Perek in Pesachim, we talk about Makom Shenagu. There's a minhag in many places not to do melacha on the first half of the day, on the 14th, on Erev Pesach. So there are exceptions to that rule. There are three professions that have an exception to that. Hachaitin, Vesaparin, Vakovasin. These are three professions: the tailors, the barbers, and the launderers. The tailor is allowed to do this because one is allowed to stitch, one is allowed to do tailor work on chol moed if he is a hejot. We discussed this already earlier in our mesechta, that what is the definition of a hejot, which you're allowed to fix things for tzorach hamoed and do this. So now we allow the professional to handle it before chol moed, meaning on Erev Yom Tov. Hasaparin vakobsin shekein abayim dinat hayam vayotzei mibeit asurim mutarim lesaper lechabes. This is our upcoming Mishnah that we'll see. But these are individuals who, there are exceptions to the rule on chol moed where a barber is allowed to work and where a launderer is allowed to work because there are certain individuals who didn't have the opportunity prior to chol moed. Generally, we demand that you do all malacha beforehand, meaning that laundering and getting a haircut, we demand that you do beforehand because we want you to look good for Yom Tov. Why don't you do it on chol moed during the moed? Want it before the moed? Want everything done beforehand? What happens if a person's in a situation where they can't do it? They're only released from prison on chol moed. They were on a long journey and they come back. I mean, the ship lands on Chol HaMoed. These are people who had no chance to do this before Moed, so we don't penalize them. They can do it on the Moed itself. They can do it on Chol HaMoed. So since there is a dispensation on Chol HaMoed, they're allowed to do it on Erev Yom Tov. So now, if you think that a person who needs wages, therefore you're allowed to do something, then any malacha should be mutar on Erev Yom Tov, because any malacha you can give out on Chol HaMoed. There's a dispensation for any malacha on Chol HaMoed if a person needs the wages. That should also grant you that on Erev Yom Tov, that on Yidala, that malacha should be mutar. Because that is a manifestation of this malacha on Chol HaMoed, which is mutar. So Matkiv Lara Papa, are you really going down the right path over here? Elamiata Binyan Lishtare. She allowed to build on Erev Yom Tov, on the Yudalid. She came Kotel HaGohel Yerushut HaRabim. We saw this earlier in the Masechta. A wall that is leaning into the Yerushut HaRabim, dangerously tipping over. Soteru Boneh Kedarko. Ipnei Sakana. One's allowed to take it down and rebuild it because of the danger involved. So again, here, now we have a dispensation to build during Chol HaMoed, to do work during Chol HaMoed. So then also on Yudalid, she'll be able to build. So Matkudav Ravina, Miata Lavlar, a sofer, Vishtaresh, Ken Kodvim, Kedushe Nashim, Gitin, Vishovarin. You're allowed to write things that are Dovra Aved during Chol HaMoed. In first, Kedushe Nashim here doesn't literally mean Kiddushin, because we already learned that's problematic in terms of Kiddushin on Chol HaMoed, Aim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. But here we're talking about Kiddushim in terms of the agreements between the families beforehand, the monetary obligations that are going to be associated with the marriage or the upcoming marriage. This is the agreement in the shidduch, not necessarily the kiddushin themselves, but you're allowed to write that down, because that's a dover avid. That's something that you're allowed to negotiate, allowed to come to an agreement on Chol HaMoed, and you want to document it. Gitin. Again, where a person needs to get divorced, and they need a writ of divorce, because some of the Rishonim explain it here, this is a simcha shelo. This will enhance the simcha of his Yom Tov, because in a bad marriage, they want to undo the marriage, they don't want the marriage, you're allowed to write the gitin. Shovarim, receipts for payment. If someone repaid you a loan on that period of time, you want a receipt for that because you don't want them to double charge you for the monies that you have returned. So all of these are dover aved that are allowed to be done on Chol HaMoed. So here you have permission for a sofer to work on Chol HaMoed. So too, on your Yudalid, you have permission for a sofer to work. How come he's not listed in those exceptions, the three umaniyot? So both of these questions, both of Ravina and Rav Sheshit should say that your extrapolation of the din is incorrect. You're saying, oh, look, I have these three, and it doesn't mention Schar Pula. It should have mentioned Schar Pula. They said, well, we have all these other cases which aren't mentioned either. So your distinction or your reasoning is wrong. And this is what the Gemara says, Elo Amar Rav Ashi. This is the reasoning. Moed Arabasar Karomitz. You're asking a question from Chol HaMoed to the 14th. Moed Mishum Tirchahu. The problem on Chol HaMoed is we don't want you engaged in items that take up time, that are involved. Makom Pseda Sharu Abanan. Where there's a loss involved, the Rabbanan allowed you to do it. Arbasa Mishum Tzorach Yom Tovhu. The reason that you're allowed to do work on Arbasa is because it's something that's necessary for the Yom Tov. Meaning the Tzorach Yom Tov Sharu Abanan. Anything that is a Tzorach of the Yom Tov, they allow. If it's not a Tzorach of Yom Tov, you can't do it. Meaning the Lav Tzorach Yom Tov Lo Sharu Abanan. So you're dealing with different reasons over here. The reason that the Binyan is allowed during Chol HaMoed is because there's Sakana. Meaning that it's Tircha. But the tircha is allowed because you have sakana here. That doesn't mean that binyan on Erev Yom Tov is allowed. Binyan on Erev Yom Tov is not a blanket dispensation. It's because there, on the 14th, you have to only do things that are tzorach HaMoed. If the binyan is tzorach HaMoed and it's necessary for your Yom Tov, then maybe it would be allowed on the 14th. Same thing with the lavla, with the sofer. One determination is dovra aved on Chol HaMoed. On Erev Yom Tov, you have to think about it. Is it necessary for the Yom Tov? Again, there are different qualifications, different questions at hand. And those different questions will determine whether it's mutar or not mutar. You can't say one behest the other. I mean, that just because you could do it on Chol HaMoed doesn't mean you could do it on Yudalit. You could do it on Chol HaMoed for its own reason. On Yudalit, you have to look at its own reason also. You have to look at the reason in each one of them and determine whether it gets the dispensation or does not get the dispensation. So Schar Pula is a dispensation on Chol HaMoed. Maybe it's not necessary on Erev Yom Tov. He didn't need the money then. If he doesn't need the money, you can't do the malacha. Emifanim mi bayit lebayit. You cannot move objects from house to house. Here we're talking about kelim, household items. Talking about kelim versus like utensils or grains, things that are in one house. You're not allowed to move it from one house to the other house. I mean, a house here to a house somewhere else. You can't move. Aval mifaneh ulechatzero. You're allowed to move it from what sounds like here in the Mishnah. You're allowed to move it from a house in another chatzer to your chatzer. So it sounds like the only problem is moving from house to house, not from house to chatzer, even though the distance is great, or there's tircha here. Eimei v'in kelimi beit uman. You're not allowed to bring objects back from the house of the craftsman. If he finishes the work, you can't bring it back on Cholom Moed. Michoshesh lehem mefanan lechatzer acheret. If he worries about the risk of these items, then he's allowed to move them to another chatzer. Again, the Gemara will discuss these. Number one is, v'amart reisha eimei fanim klal. The reisha makes a definitive statement. You're not allowed to move, period. That's it. Don't move. Then the Seifa says, well, if you move it from a house to a chatzer, then you're okay. What's that? So Rabbi, Seifa at on the bayit shebechatzer. Rabbi comes along and explains, when it says here, you're allowed to move it into the chatzer, that means that you're allowed to move it on the bayit shebechatzer. You're allowed to move it into the house that's in that chatzer. So whether it means that you're allowed to move it from the chatzer into a bayit of that chatzer, or whether you can move it from two houses that are in the single chatzer, where there's less tircha involved and there's less befarhesia. It's not public, and it's also not a big tircha, maybe there it's permitted. That's what the Seif is speaking about. The Reish is talking about a case where, number one, it's a big tircha, because you're going from a house in this chatzer to a house in another chatzer, plus, it becomes befarhesia, because you go out into the public domain to deal with it. You have to pass out of this chatzer in order to do it. Right? Amar Papa, Badiklan Rava. Rava was testing us. We have another case where in the Gemara Pesachim tells us that you're allowed to bring things back and forth from Beit Uman, afal pi shein letzarach hamoed, even though it's not necessary in Chol Hamoed. And we answer him, kan bar basar, kan becholosh hamoed. Our mission is talking about a case of cholosh hamoed, and therefore it has to be tzarach hamoed. And our basar on the 14th, it doesn't have to be letzarach hamoed. There, simply to get your item back is permissible on Erev Yom Tov. So that's one differentiation. They're both talking about a case of Chol Hamoed. Kan b'mamino, kan b'shein mamino. Depends if you trust the craftsman. You're paying the craftsman now. Do you trust him that he's not going to collect from you again? That he's not going to ask you to pay again? If you trust him, then you have to leave it there and you can't bring it back because it's not letzarach hamoed. You have to leave it there. On the other hand, if you don't trust him and you paid him now, you're allowed to bring it back because otherwise he's going to charge you again. And we're not, that is, quote unquote, letzarach hamoed. It's like a davar aved. If you pay him now, you have to pay again. That's really a davar aved if you leave it there because you're going to get charged again. So there you're allowed to take it back. Vatanya, don't we have a brighta? Mevim keli mi beta uman kugon kad mi beta kadar kos mi beta zagag. You're allowed to bring back a pitcher from the pitcher maker's house or the barrel maker's house, because and a cup from the glass maker's house. Avalot semri beta tseva, not wool from the dyer. Avalot keli mi beta uman, and not utensils from beta uman. If he doesn't have anything to eat, then you're allowed to pay him. Then you leave it there. If he doesn't trust him, then he's allowed to move it to another house that is adjacent or proximate. If he's still worried about them when he moves them to the next location that they're going to be stolen, then he can bring them home because it's done b'tzina. By the way, again, here you see tzina in the face of gneva. Similar to the Mishnah we discussed before, right? The question of tzina arises when you have an issue of davar aved because of gneva. So now the Vahatanya is really binichuta. The Tanya is not a question, but rather support for what we just said. That you're allowed to bring it back when there is the possibility of double collection. But you don't trust him, there you're allowed to bring it back in Cholom Moed, even though it's not Sorecha Moed. So there were two reasons that you dealt with this now. One reason is, why are you paying him on Cholom Moed? You're paying him on Cholom Moed because in lo mayochal, he has nothing to eat. So you're allowed to give him Schar Pula on Moed. Second thing is, now that you paid him, can you now take the object back because you're at risk of being double charged? So that's the second thing. Yes, if you don't trust him, you're allowed to take the object back. So that our brayta supports what we've seen before. Now, Teratzta, the Gemara says, you gave two answers here. One answer was the 14th versus Chol Hamoed. The other answer was Chol Hamoed, depending if you trust him or not. Gemara says, wait, the brayta says, molichin umevein. You're allowed to bring and take back an object from the Beit HaUman. So Teratzta mevein. You explain the case of bringing it back from the Beit HaUman. Why you can take it from his house? Molichin kasha. Right? You can't. What do you mean you can't bring it to his house? Why would you be able to bring it to his house on the Chol Hamoed? Tiktani, emevein, v'koshken, shein molichin. Case here is that you're not allowed to bring it back. Certainly you're not allowed to take it over there. Must be that the first answer is the right answer. The first answer is the difference between the 14th and Chol Hamoed. On the 14th, you can take it to his house, you can bring it back from his house, because it's not Chol Hamoed yet. On the other hand, when it's Chol Hamoed, then you can do neither unless there's an exception to the rule. He needs the money, and then you're allowed to take it back from his house if you don't trust him once you've given him the money. If you trust him, you can pay him and leave it there. If you don't trust him, then you can pay him and take the object back. So that's the differentiation between the 14 and the Chol HaMoed. Within Chol HaMoed itself, you can't make such a distinction because the case of Ein Molichin and Ein Mevi'in, Ein Molichin doesn't make sense in that case because Ein Molichin is not right, that makes sense in a case of Ein Umamino. If you don't trust them, then why are you taking it over there? It doesn't make any sense in that case. So that can't be the answer to our stira between our Mishnah and the Braita that we brought. Alright, next Mishnah. Mechapim el ktziot bikash. One is allowed to cover over ktziot. Ktziot are items that were cut open to dry and are left out in the muksa. The muksa is an area either designated or kli that is designated to allow the items to dry out. And that's where they make the dvela. The igulei dvela is by drying them out and they cake together. By doing this, by cutting them open and letting them dry out and mush together. So that you're allowed to cover with kash. V'yodomer af mi'avim. You're allowed to thicken it, and we'll discuss what that means. Mochrei peirot ksut v'kelim mochrim b'tzina. People who are selling fruits and clothing are allowed to sell privately the tzorach ha-moed. Obviously, it has to be for the tzorach ha-moed, otherwise you wouldn't be able to transact. But the tzorach ha-moed, you're allowed to do this in a quiet manner. Hatsaidin, trappers, v'adishushot, and those people that are, we call them dash, the malacha of dash, who crush for the ones who are preparing the grains to be utilized, v'agrusot, and those that are dealing with pulin, the grusot, make the ability to grind them down, osim b'tzina, again, they can do it b'tzina, the tzorach ha-moed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, hey mechmir al atzman. Rabbi Yossi says they were machmir on themselves. Question of what he means. What it means, is that why they did it privately? Because they were machmir on themselves? Is Rabbi Yossi saying there's even a greater chumrah that they took upon themselves not to do it at all?
And this applies to Kneva, not qualified.
Right, so this is not Kneva, so why do they have to do it Bitsina? Right, so we have to understand this is not a Dover Aved, so that's why. Okay, so this may not be under the same category. Over there, we're talking about the dispensation of Dover Aved. That's why Bitsina was needed by Gneva. Over here, this is a totally different reason, which is Tzorach HaMoed. Now, by Tzorach HaMoed, there, why do you have to do Bitsina here? That's a good question. That is because we don't want it to make it obvious that there is transactions like normal. You can't just open up your store on Chol HaMoed. The exception to the rule is Tzorach HaMoed. The Tzorach HaMoed lets you open up for short periods of time and allow people to get what they need for the Moed. You can't do business as usual. Now, the truth is, and Tosafot actually mentions this in the Gemara, about the Gemara itself, is that we saw this before, that you're allowed to do this on Yom Tov itself. The stores were open not only on Chol HaMoed, they were open on Yom Tov to get fresh produce. Now, you're not going to pay on Yom Tov, but they were clearly open in order to get the fresh produce that they needed, because their day, there's no refrigeration, there's no way to get these items, so the butcher had to shecht on Yom Tov itself, they had to get the spices, everything was freshly done on Yom Tov. So the stores were open on Yom Tov. So, this is not just Chol HaMoed, this is Yom Tov itself, and the Betzina applies to Yom Tov and might apply to Chol HaMoed as well. So, Pligi bar Rabbi Chia bar Abba Rabbi Asi, v'tavayu mishmei de Chizkia. They both say in the name of Chizkia and Rabbi Yochanan. Chad amar mechapin, what is mechapin? A klushe. Klushe means thin. The ma'avin asmuche means a thick layer. So here we're talking about the cover that you put on top. How thick is the cover? Is it a thin cover where there's still exposure of the items? Or is it a thick cover? That's the difference between mechapin and me'avin. V'chad amar mechapin ben ekluche ben esmuche. One says, no, whether you put a thick or thin cover over it, that's called mechapin. Me'avin is osinota kemin kiri. Then you pile them up, you stack them up. Not only do you pile something on top to protect it, you actually consolidate the ktsiot that are underneath, and you make them into a smaller pile and a higher pile. That's what it calls to be me'aveh. Me'aveh is not thickening of the cover, it's a thickening of the underlying object that you are covering. So Tanya Nami Ochi have a braita that supports that explanation. Me'avin oseoto kamin kri. Make it into a pile. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So that supports the explanation, or the one who says that me'avin, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is to make it into a pile, the underlying object into a pile. Not talking about the thickening of the cover. Yes, the ability to do this is because it's a Dover Aved, meaning if you don't cover it, it might rain on it, and if it rains on it, it's going to get ruined. So the ability to store it or to cover it or to make it more consolidated is to protect the underlying item, and that's why it's a Dover Aved. Right, the first half of the Mishnah is clearly Dover Aved, the second half of the Mishnah is Tzorcha Moed. Now, Mochrei Perot Ksut V'Kalim Mochrim B'Tzina, Ibalu, Hein Yechmir Al Atzman, Delo Aved Dei Klau. This, what Rabbi Yossi says, they were Machmir on themselves means they didn't do it at all. He's explaining the Mishnah and saying the reason they did it Bitsina is because that is the Chumrah that they took upon themselves. Tashma, mochrei peirot ksut v'kelim mochrei mitzina'at l'tzarech ha'moed. It's allowed to sell in a quiet manner because of the tzarech ha'moed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, tagrei tveria heinech miru al atzman, shalei mochrim kol ikar. Shopkeepers in Tveria, or the sellers in Tveria, were machmir themselves not to do it at all. So you see here Rabbi Yossi's komra is, they desisted from doing this whatsoever. Tzidei chayot v'ofot v'dagin, trappers of animals, birds, fish, tzadin b'tzina'a l'tzarech ha'moed. They can do this quietly for tzarech ha'moed. Rabbi Yossi omer, tzidei akko heina chmiru atzman shlo yitzadin kol ikar. Those people in Akko did it quietly, they didn't do it at all. So again, you see a support of this idea. When Rabbi Yossi says Chumra, it means not what's written in our Mishnah, but an additional Chumra is that they didn't open up at all. They closed shop on these days. Deshushe Chilka Tragis Vitisne. Someone who is a crusher. Here, Dash. Again, the Malacha of Dash, which is normally associated with crushing, or when you're taking the chaff away from the kernels, you stomp on it, you crush it in order that it separates away. So here, Deshushe Chilka Tragis Vitisne. Doshushim b'tzina. They're allowed to do this crushing b'tzina privately. The tzarech ha'moed, if it's needed, necessary for the moed. Yossi Omer, doshushe tzipori enech miru latzman shlo yu doshushim kol ikar. Those in tzipori were machmer and they didn't do this at all. Now what the chilka tragis and tisne is, Amar Abai, and we have an explanation of it. Chilka is chada letarte. It's splitting the grain from one into two. That's where chaluk, lichlachaluk, is to split. So chilka is to split it in half. Tragis, chada letlat, is 1 to 3, and from the word try. Triangle, try, it means 3, 1 to 3. Tisne is chada letarba, is 1 to 4. I don't know how that comes out of tetra, or some sort of formulation of the 4 in Greek. So that's also 1 to 4. So that's the splitting of it. So they dushushe, the splitting of it into chilka, which is, these are like groats pounders, they're called. So the splitting of 1 into 2 is called like coarse meal. Splitting 1 into 3 is what they call pulse porridge. And splitting into 4 is pearl barley. These are the names for these different types of splitting of them. But these are grains that we know, like porridge and farina and all these different types of grains that are eaten. This is how they do it. They split the grain down and then they cook the grain in that manner. So this is allowed to be done, Letzarech HaMoed. Again, Rabbi Yossi says that those people in Tzipori did not practice this at all, even Letzarech HaMoed, because they were machmir on themselves. Kiyata Rav Dimi Amar. But here he says that kunta, it's kunta. Now here it's not clear what he means. That kunta is spelt. Skusmin means spelt. Is he defining all of them? These are 3 different types of spelt? Or is he talking about chilka alone? That's the way Rashi seems to indicate here, that kunta means spelt, means the chilka here is spelt that they're talking about. So meitave, chilka, tragis, vitisne, tamein b'chol makom. They're tamei no matter what. So now, no matter what here means, because the previous statement in this Mishnah and Machshirin is, this is only true in the city, it's not true in the villages. That is, when they are grinding down the grains to make it into milling it to flour, in the case of the city, when they mill it for flour, they're trying to get solid. They're trying to get clear, clean flour. So the only way to get clean, clear flour is to wash it first, to put it in water and soak it, and then to grind it. So therefore, the grains were exposed to water, and that means they're mukshar the kabel tumah. They have been primed to accept tumah, and they can accept tumah. The villagers were not so careful about this. They weren't so careful about getting the cleanest flour, therefore they did not soak their grains. Don't soak the grains, there was not mukshar the kabel tumah, they weren't primed for tumah, they cannot be mekabel tumah. But then the Mishnah continues and says, chilka tragas v'tisnei tamei b'chol makom. The tamei, both in the city and in the villages. Bishlom alaman demarchada letarte letzlat arba, according to Abai's explanation of what these are, shumachi tamei b'chol makom. Didkashur, because they definitely were mitkasher. The only way to split it, 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4, is to soak it. You can't split them unless you've soaked the grain. So for sure, they soaked the grain. Elamandamar kunta, if you're talking about spelt, then, amay tmeim b'chol makom, aloit kasher. Who says that spelt has to be put through water in order to mill the spelt or to split the spelt? When it says, kagon de mikalfon, he's shelling them. He's shelling the spelt. Dilav de sharlu b'mayalav em mikalfa. You got shelled spelt. The only way to shell spelt is to put it, soak it in water to have the shell released from the grain itself. And so the shelling was definitely done by soaking it beforehand. And that's why it's kasher, the kabel tumah. V'amai kari lechilka. Now, according to one who says it's spelt, why is it called chilka? According to one who says that it's splitting 1 to 2, it's because of the word chaluk, to split. So shakel chilkayu. He took off their chaluk. The word chaluk also means a tunic. He took off their covering. He took off their clothing. So to take off the shell is to take off their clothing. So that's the way the reason word chilka is referencing spelt. Meitave, hanoder min adagan, when it takes a neder not to benefit from grains, asur af bepula mitzri, is also asur with the type of legume. This type of legume, they actually milled into a flour, and therefore it has a din like a grain, they treated it like a grain. Yavesh, as it's dry, umutar belach, obviously it's still moist, they couldn't grind into a grain, then it has more of a din like a legume and not like grain. Umutar be'ores, and you're allowed to have rice. Again, this is a makloka we see all over Shas, as to whether what the classification of rice. Is rice classified as a grain, or is rice not classified as a grain? Bechilko betragis utiste, and you're allowed to have any of these three items. These three items are no longer considered to be grains anymore. They become more like cereal. According to Abai's explanation, that makes sense. The nafkalu mitorah degan, they've left the realm of grain. Grain where you pile it up and where you mill it. That's gone because they're no longer going to do this. You're going to utilize them as is here in that split state. And they no longer qualify as being grains of degan, things that are piled up. Because that's not what you're going to do with them anymore. Halaman de Markunta, spelt, dagan ma'alyahu. Spelt is one of the five grains, right? Yechita, se'ura, kusmin, shifon, and shibulut shual. Kusmin is one of the five grains, and it is qualified as a dagan. Something that you make hamotzi on, something that you make mizonot on. It's a regular grain. Kasha, that's a serious question on that explanation of Rav Dimi. Ravuna, sharlu lahanu kupaita, the meza lezvune kurchayu b'shuka. He allowed these individuals, these krupaita, who sold bisamim, who sold spices, to sell like normal in the shuk on Cholomoed. So Eitve Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says that's true. Chanut tucha l'satyo. So a store that is open up into a colonnade, an area where there's a colonnade, which means that it's not in a public thoroughfare. Poteach v'noel k'darko. He's allowed to open it up and close like normal. Because since it's not in the public domain, it's already a side store, it's on a side road, that's okay. He's opened up the Rishutarim. He can open one of the two doors that are the entrance way to the store. So he does half open. You know, not fully open, but half open because it's to show this. Now, this is where Tosfot points out that this might be talking about Yom Tov. That's why the Gemara doesn't ask the question from the first half of this statement over here, from this Tosefta, because this might be on Yom Tov itself, not on Chol HaMoed. And this is always telling you that the stores were open on Yom Tov, not just on Chol HaMoed. Ve'erev Yom Tov Acharon. So here it's clearly Chol HaMoed, because it's Erev Yom Tov Acharon. On the Erev Yom Tov of the last Yom Tov, Shel Chag, Motzin, Omater, Et Shukei Ha'ir, Beperot, Beshvil, Kvod Yom Tov Acharon. Bepnei Kvod Yom Tov Acharon, In, Shlomi, Pnei Kvod Yom Tov Acharon, So what it says here is that when it comes to Chol HaMoed, Chol HaMoed, which is Erev Yom Tov Acharon, you're allowed to sell like normal. Meaning that they fill the shuk up with fruits and everything to be sold. Why? Because of Yom Tov Acharon. So that's allowed. But what do you see from here? The only permissibility on Chol HaMoed is for that last day, to provide for Yom Tov Acharon. But on Chol HaMoed in general, you're not allowed to open up. So how come over here we're saying that you're allowed to sell spices like normal on Chol HaMoed? So where it says, Lokasho, have a peri, have a tavlin, the difference between fruits and spices. The way Rashi explains it over here, he says that there are certain fruits and vegetables that are used in themselves, and there are other vegetables that are used for spicing. So the vegetables that are used for spicing, you're allowed to sell like normal. The fruits or vegetables that are used for themselves to be eaten, those you can only do on Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov Acharon, not on Chol HaMoed in general. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot disagrees, and he says, of course from the Aruch, that it's mini b'samim, real spices. So again, in their day, if you're doing things fresh, and you're cooking everything fresh, according to Rashi's explanation, you can't keep the vegetables around, the fruits around, they go bad. There's no refrigeration. So if you're going to pick something that's going to flavor the pots or the food that you are cooking, then you got to pick it fresh, because otherwise it's not going to be. You pick an onion, you're going to pick a turnip to use it to put in as a flavor into the item. You got to pick it then. You pick it 3 days ago, it's not going to do anything for you. It's going to be wilted and useless at that point in time. According to Tosafot, that you grind the b'samim, you make them fresh, because otherwise the b'samim doesn't have the potency that you want. You want it fresh, you want the pepper ground right there on the spot, because that gives you fresh pepper. If you don't do it then it's not going to be fresh to use in your cooking. So that's the difference here. When something has to be utilized there, you're allowed to get it fresh, the b'samim, that you're allowed to sell, because that's something that's needed on the spot, something that needs to be done fresh. Whereas the fruits that you have, yes, you were supposed to pick them beforehand, so therefore you're supposed to have everything cooked before Yom Tov and prepared before Yom Tov. If you didn't do it then, on Tzarech HaMoed, we're going to only allow you to open it up in a probably closed or not public manner. You can't do it like normal, because you should have taken care of it beforehand. Since you didn't, or you need it now, then it's necessary to allow you to buy it. So like fresh milk, for instance, today, if you have to have a milk that you need during Chol HaMoed, so if the store opens up, you're allowed to go buy milk, because that is Sarach HaMoed. You can't stockpile the milk beforehand, or it's going to go bad, or you're going to run out of milk anyway, no matter how much you stockpile, then you're allowed to buy it on Chol HaMoed. So the stores are open, allow you to do something like that. And you're talking about things that are necessary to buy right on the spot. If you bought them beforehand, they'd be no good. Then those items can be sold in a normal manner, opened in a normal manner, meaning that there is no problem of selling these items on Chol HaMoed, just like on the Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov Acharon. There's no reason not to sell because of the Kavod Yom Tov Acharon. Okay, we'll stop over here with the end of the parak. Hadron Alach, Mishafach.